to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You are listening to KDRT 95.7 in Davis, California. I'm Alex, and you can find us online at kdrt.org. Today, I'm joined by the rest of the Wildcard crew. Please introduce yourself, guys.
My name is Marty Payne.
My name is Dorili.
My name is Yoroji.
And hi, my name is Madeline.
All right. This week, we're going to be talking about all our green flags and red flags and dating, from the good signs to watch for to the ones that should really reconsider. All right, so Madeline, what is a green flag, actually?
A green flag is a trait or behavior that signals someone is a good match for you. It's a positive sign that tells you, hey, this person might be worth investing in.
Okay, so it's the good stuff. So, like, what about a red flag?
A red flag, it's the opposite. It's a warning sign. It's something that makes you feel uneasy or raises concerns about compatibility, honesty, or respect. Definitely something to take note of before you start dating someone.
All right, so we reached out to a lot of UC Davis students to hear about their personal experiences. All right, up first, we got Andrew with a green flag.
My name is Andrew, and I think some green flags are good communication and just random, spontaneous, like, flirty texts that are fun and nice to read.
All right, what do you guys think of that? Spontaneous, flirty texts, how do we feel about that?
I think it's a good communication skills are definitely a green flag. Whereas the foundations of healthy relationship.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, communication's really important. They say that. It's kind of a cliche at this point, but I mean, without communication, you don't really have any of that honesty or integrity in a relationship.
Yeah, it's easy to overlook communication, I think, but I'm really glad that Andrew brought that up because I think when people get into a relationship, they don't consider communication.
I think it could also be a red flag sometimes, right? If someone is, like, constantly communicating and there's, like, a codependency aspect there, that's not necessarily healthy either. So it could really go either way, I think.
Definitely. All right, so now we've got another green flag from Chupi. All right, let's listen to that.
I'm Chupi, and I think a green flag is when they're willing to cook for you.
Woo! All right. If you heard that, Chupi just said, cooking, willing to cook for you is a green flag. What do you think of that, guys? I think that's definitely it was the green flag. I would love to have someone cook for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Having a chef as a partner, that's got to be one great quality.
I mean, I think cooking for somebody is very much a sign of love because, you know, it's providing for them and also just, like, showing how much you really care for them because, you know, aside from just the work involved, cooking for somebody is, like, one of the oldest forms of love, in my opinion.
What type of food or dishes would you like your significant other to make you guys?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I really love fish, so that's definitely a top for me. But anything, I think, that reminds you of home might be a great dish. What about you, Marty? What do you think?
I agree. I'm a big fan of casseroles, so anything like that. I'm pretty easygoing, so any kind of food I'm pretty cool with.
Is cooking a love language, guys? What do you think?
I think so. It shows that you can put care and love into something.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
All right, let's move on to now our red flags. We got Vivian, who had a huge list on her phone of over 200 red flags. And this is just a few that she gave us. So let's take a listen to Vivian.
Hello, my name is Vivian. This is part of my list of red flags for men when dating. Number one, I would say, is men who have a photography account on Instagram. any man older than about 16 who still uses Snapchat, men who really enjoy SNL. Like, they think it's really funny, not just a script every once in a while, but men that, like, actively watch it and they're like, wow, that's so funny. And men that tell me I can't stand on a public sidewalk in a public place. I would say men that have, like, a really bad mustache. Men that have, like, a really bad mustache, like, you can tell that they're not supposed to have one, but they tried to have it anyways. I'm going to say, men who listen to Howard Stern or Joe Rogan or both. Men that think that Radiohead is really underground and you're getting to know them and they send you a song and it's a Radiohead song. Men who post Outfit of the Day videos. That's a big one, in my opinion. Men who have a spam account on Instagram. I would say that. And then, lastly, I'm going to say men who refuse to eat seed oils. Or talk about how you can't eat seed oils. Or they're really big into eating meat. So, I would say that's it. That's just a few things. Yeah.
All right, that was Vivian. And, yeah, that was just a small part of her list. But it was really interesting to see how much detail she goes into.
God, I admire that. I mean, having a list of over, I think she said between 200 and 300 red flags, like, and zero green flags, by the way. So she'd only had a red flag list. Like, that's dedication. That's like years worth of research.
I know. I wonder who exactly has hurt her in order to write a list that substantial.
Yeah, God, I can't even imagine. Definitely taking notes, so don't make any mistakes around Vivian.
I know. I was like, I felt like some of those were aimed at me, but she doesn't know me, so I was like, how does she know?
Which one stuck out to you, Alex?
Probably, I still use Snapchat. I mean, is that that bad, guys?
I think I might agree with her on that one. I think definitely, it seems like it might fade out with age, or like that was the intention behind it, but there's definitely a lot of people in their 20s and 30s that have Snapchat that they use regularly still, which is like insane to me.
Can we talk about one of her points that she brought up, which was men who, wait, what was it? Can you remember what it was? Men who
her rocking a mustache that, yes, you know, they can't seem to grow. I think that was,
do you want to explain why she said that one?
Oh my goodness. Well, for those listening, when we interviewed Vivian, in the middle of our interview, we had a rude man like push us on the sidewalk. Yeah, and he told us to stop loitering, essentially, on a public sidewalk. So that was definitely an interesting experience.
We're on the UC Davis campus as students on a public sidewalk, according to him. And we were not allowed to stand there and conduct our interview because we were blocking his way to his vehicle.
Yeah, he wasn't too happy with us. So he ended up on Vivian's red flag list then and there. Instantaneously.
I know. We got to see a live red flag, which is very interesting.
All right, Marty, did any of those red flags stand out to you?
Yeah, I feel directly called out about the bad mustache one, but I guess that's just me. Still growing out, but
I know, me whatever. Too. But it's okay. I think she was directed at the man, the lovely man who was confronting us that day.
Yeah, hate to be that guy.
All right, so now we got one more red flag. This time from Kai. All right, let's take a listen to that one.
My name is Marty, and I'm here with
Kai.
All right, Kai, what is one of your red flags?
I always laugh too loud in public, and like many times my friend just like look at me like I'm stupid or stuff.
Yeah, this is my red flag. Laughing at the wrong time. Okay, yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah, it's my red flag too. You know, I remember one time I was having dinner with a girl who impressed me very much. So he called the waiter very loud, really loud. The restaurant was really quiet. Someone was looking at me. So I was embarrassed. After that, I declined many of her invitations, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the way a significant other treats other people, especially staff, is going to tell you a lot how they might treat you. So definitely a red flag, I would say.
I would agree. Also, that just leads to really embarrassing moments, too. If you treat the waitstaff bad, it's just very embarrassing for the other person. I've been in that situation.
So, guys, I don't know if you've given it much thought this week with our topic, but what are some of your green or red flags that you'd like to share live on air?
All right, yeah, I'll start. I guess one of my red flags is I say things I don't necessarily mean to say, and I'll forget to say things that I do mean to say. So that's
Can you give us an example of that?
I'd rather not, but, you know,
I'll
just leave it general. All right.
I guess one of – wait, are we talking about saying our red flags or
– Yeah.
For us. Oh. Mm-hmm. Hmm. I'm not very good at communicating. Like, I'll just – I don't like to reach out first, I notice. I think that's one of my problems. So I don't really reach out to people. I just wait for them to reach out to me. I'm like, oh, hey.
Yeah, I could see how that could lead to some issues. All right.
Yeah, I definitely have a really great red flag, guys. Are you ready for this? Anyone who owns or drives a Cybertruck – those things are the ugliest things on the planet. I cannot believe they exist. Like, every time I see them, it ruins my day. Yeah, everyone in the studio right now is, like, snapping for those of you listening. I mean, just awful. So if you drive a Cybertruck and you're listening in your Cybertruck right now, just know that that is a red flag. You are a walking red flag.
You're driving around in a refrigerator.
Okay, I don't think Elon Musk is listening, so I think we're okay to mention that. Okay, well, let's quickly discuss some of our green flags. I have to lighten up the mood before we end off the show. Anyone want to give a green flag real quick?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. I've been told it's a green flag to have older siblings, so particularly sisters. So definitely learning about communication and that kind of thing is very important for me. Something, honestly, I think I've taken for granted for many years, but very thankful to have them in my life.
All right. Well, thank you for that green flag, Marty. And unfortunately, that's the end of our time. We were the Lifestyle segment. Thank you for listening. And if you like what you hear, we'll be here every Thursday at 10 o'clock in the morning on 95.7 KDRT. And up next, we have LASS with AI in Universities.
Hey everyone, thank you so much to Wildcard for that insightful show on red flags. We are LASS and you're listening to KDRT 95.7 FM Davis. And I'm Alyssa.
I'm Sasha.
I'm Shane.
I'm Leah.
And today we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence in university, you know, the big AI. Do any of y'all have any thoughts on that?
I think what we've found out from this week is that all of us have a lot of thoughts on AI. Very differing perspectives, but what do you guys have to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have a lot to say. I'm sure we're going to get into it. I think AI can be good. I think it can be bad. And we're really going to get into it today.
It definitely depends on personal usage and how you're using it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we conducted an interview with Elizabeth Louie, who is a cognitive science major here at UC Davis, working for AISC, which is the Artificial Intelligence Student Collective on campus. So let's listen to that interview.
My good friend, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Louie. Lizzie, hi. If you want to introduce yourself a little bit.
I am a cognitive science major with a computational emphasis, and I'm also in the AI student collective here at UC Davis. I'm in the technical writing cohort. It's taking like these complex narratives of what AI is and that research and kind of making it accessible for people who don't understand complex writing or just writing that involves probability equations. It's just like trying to make information known to the general public. And last quarter, we weren't working with a professor yet. We were just researching AI and making blog posts about it. Another thing that I learned is that AI is being implemented literally everywhere, like in the medical field. People are getting loans based off AI decisions. So it's really important for us to know like where things can go wrong. This quarter, we're working with professors. I'm working with Gabriel Simmons in the computer science department, and I'm gonna write a synthesis article based on his research of the NAPS model, which is basically just a alternative view to look at artificial intelligence in an anthropology approach, because it gets to a certain point where we start to view these systems as something that could hold consciousness. And he's kind of taking that term of belief and breaking the model down into like different levels so that we can kind of approach the debate on whether or not AI systems have a certain extent of belief. I mean, a large language model is just basically like ChatGPT. And I think the main misconception with this application is that it doesn't take data from the internet and like analyze it and then give you an output. Large language models are purely based on a probability distribution of what word would most likely come after the next. Large language models, there's like so many misconceptions around them, and it's important for people to realize what they're actually doing for humanity and society.
Have you done any research into like the environmental implications of these?
No, I haven't looked too much into that, but we have briefly discussed that. Well, just like all computers, they've mm-hmm. always had an environmental impact, and I think that's in a completely different conversation that we haven't touched on. But when we were talking about the overuse of ChatGPT and the way people just kind of like use it instead of Google at this point, where they just like have a really easy question.
Yeah, because I saw something online where someone was like, I'll use ChatGPT to be like, how long does it take for cottage cheese to go bad? When I'm like, yeah. Use Google for that. Like, yeah. I understand ChatGPT in an academic setting, especially when it comes to STEM. And like, I've especially used it when it comes to computer mm-hmm. science and breaking down lines of code and like understanding what those things mean. Mm-hmm. But in the broader scope, like, especially when we get into like critical analysis and like the humanities, I think it's a lot more of a gray area.
Yeah, and that's one of the main motivators and audience for Professor Simmons is he's looking more at like how artificial intelligence is being implemented in the political science field and mm-hmm. how a lot of political scientists are using AI to try to predict what's going on in certain states and territories and like how conflicts may or may not occur. And the issue here is that a lot of these political scientists are just using this AI to predict their own research without understanding what's even going on in the systems, with the assumption that any output is correct, or the assumption that the system is trained on like the proper data sets. Like, there are just people out there who are using AI for broader scopes without even knowing what's going on within it. ChatGPT is fully capable of not producing the correct output. And that just brings another issue into play. That's something that me and my friend were talking about. Things like Turnitin and AI systems that look over a student's writing in an academic setting to say whether or not a student used AI is not entirely accurate, the same way all systems are not entirely accurate. That just brings up into debate, there's like a case that a girl wrote an essay fully on her own, but because she used a generic style of writing, it becomes less personal, and that an AI system will detect like very generic writing and say, yes, this was AI, because AI produces generic writing.
Well, I think something really interesting that comes out of that is like, throughout our educations, we're taught to write in a very specific way, especially when it comes to academic writing, like MLA format, five paragraphs. Like, intro, conclusion, and we have all of these like transition words that are implied in our vocabulary. And it's obvious that when we put something into AI and like we get an output, it is going to use the language that is our like base of knowledge, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to that kind of writing, which like bringing up the Turnitin example, that's when it gets complicated because I've heard of people before who have written essays completely on their own and been flagged by Turnitin. Yeah. So the question that comes out of that is like, in academia, do we start relying on a trust-based system for like yeah. writing and plagiarism, or like, is there a way where this technology can be developed further so that
there's all large language models have the bare bones of the probability distribution that is the word predictor one after another, but you can develop LLMs to have a greater knowledge in a sense. But even if you're training the LLM like on a certain data set, there's still just like a lot of up in the airness. I just, when it comes to that specifically, my personal take is just not to use AI and like just to grade a paper in the way that any professor would grade it. Mm-hmm. I guess that gets hard when you go to university and there are like a lot of students.
Especially like as big as UC Davis, yeah. like most of our lectures are around 200 to 300 students.
Exactly. So that's obviously not like the answer there, but yeah, I guess like the one thing that you and I were talking about the other day that seemed pretty ear-catching to you was the fact that LLMs are just a prediction-based model and that they don't have access to the external world in so many senses. Like, people tend to think that AI, that ChatGPT is taking everything that's off the internet and producing an output mm-hmm. based on that. It's not. It's like trying to predict what was most likely to come after itself based on
algorithms, right?
It's called Word2Vec. It's basically like using vectors to create a graph to represent the difference in probability of whether or not a word is going to be used after the previous word.
We were having a conversation the other day about like how artificial intelligence, we have this conception that like it takes all of the information from mm-hmm. the internet and then creates an output for us, but like what we came to when we were talking about it is it's essentially just an algorithm that like collects information based on
a probability distribution model. On this topic of like the fact that we're focusing here on a large language model, like there are so many other types of artificial intelligence that are built on different systems. It's just the one that we see most is the large language model.
I mean, like, ChatGPT, though, it only really became a popular thing to use as of last year, because I remember, like, our freshman year of college, had no idea what that was.
Yeah, I was aware of it, but I didn't want to use it at that point. But then it just becomes helpful in ways that, like, other web searches are not.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a...
Thank you so much, Sasha, for conducting that interview. How was it?
I mean, it was awesome. Lizzie's my best friend, so we got to just, like, sit down and chat about stuff we usually don't talk about, because usually it's just gossip, day-to-day stuff. And so we got to talk about artificial intelligence, which she's really knowledgeable about.
Personally, I found it very insightful, and there's a couple of leads that we could go off of from the interview.
Yeah, I think she brings up a lot of interesting points about use of ChatGPT in universities and things like Turnitin. Do you guys have any experience using those sorts of things?
I don't have experience. Well, I've never been flagged for plagiarism, knock on wood. But I don't have experience with Turnitin flagging things, but sometimes it'll like underline paragraphs and be like, this resembles AI writing when I didn't use any AI. And I think that's a part of the problem with like this technology, is it uses artificial intelligence to detect artificial intelligence. So it's kind of just like a double-edged sword. Like, what do you trust? Because I know a majority of people, especially in my humanities classes and as CDM majors, like, we don't use AI because these are things that we need to know, like, just for future careers or that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, like, absolutely. And, like, the most annoying thing about Turnitin for me is that it always flags my name for whatever reason. And I'm like, why? You're only flagging my name because I've had other papers turned in with my name. Because it takes in information and then just spews it back out.
Yeah, for me, I've had experience with it. It flags, like, quotes. Even if there's quotation marks and citations and everything, it'll still say that I'm plagiarizing someone else's work. So it's a little annoying in that sense.
Yeah, Turnitin is not my favorite software. I've definitely had over 50% of an essay flagged just because of the template I was supposed to use. And it's just so stressful when I see those numbers.
Yeah, I agree. I think we really have to kind of evaluate why we're using these. I think they're good to obviously not, you know, keep in mind that we're not plagiarizing. I think it's a good idea of a software, but I think it has its flaws, and it's something we should really look into a little bit more.
Especially like artificial hallucinations where it spews out wrong information or things that like don't make sense whatsoever in regards to what you asked it.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that ChatGPT can't do math. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know sometimes it spits out the wrong information, so it's a little unfortunate.
All right, I think we've reached our time. There's so much to be said about artificial intelligence, but we're going to welcome Radio Rebel on next to discuss a film they watched over the weekend.
Hello, hello. We are Radio Rebel, and you are watching KDRT 95.7. And today, we're going to talk about a movie that some of us watched called One of Them Days.
Don't forget, I have my interview at 4.
Why are you still trying to be in corporate?
Do your own thing.
And what's that?
Living paycheck to paycheck.
You got this, okay?
You been that girl.
I'm just making sure. Sorry.
Been that girl.
Alright, so that was a bit of the trailer from One of Them Days. It stars SZA, and as you may know, Kiki Palmer. And me and my friend here, Marianne, watched it over the weekend.
Hi there. Yeah, me and Mads watched it over the weekend, and it's a new comedy, and it was really funny. So we interviewed people after the movie and to get their reactions. And yeah, here are some of the interviews.
Sorry about that, guys. We aren't able to play the audio for some reason, having some difficulties. But honestly, that's part of radio, so I think we're going to just go with it. Would you like to tell us about, you know, things you liked about the movie? Honestly, like, we can spoil a little bit. I feel like to get people out there to watch it, since it's been such a kind of calm and underlooked movie,
yeah.
I say we give them a little sliver of it.
Yeah, I think a sneak peek would be pertinent here. So obviously, people already know who the stars are, and it's written by Issa Rae, so that should hype people up too. The movie's about two roommates who need to make $1,500 in 8 hours, and that obviously is a stressful time, and the comedy really comes from the way they cope with that and the way they try to make money. I thought it was super funny. I thought the cast was really, really strong. Obviously, Kiki Palmer has been and will always be a comedy legend. But what was really surprising to me was SZA's performance, because obviously everyone knows her as a musical artist and a legend in that as well. But her comedic chops are actually crazy good. Marianne, what did you think about her?
I thought she was really funny, how she, like, supported the main actress's role, and she was just always putting out jokes, and just throughout the whole movie she was just along with it. There was like no part where she wasn't super, like, she just had bits like everywhere, and yeah. You could really tell, like, in the audience, like, people found it really funny because people were like laughing. And yeah, I really just thought she did a really great job. Honestly, it was surprising, like, seeing her act, because I've only known her as a musical artist, and I have no idea that she had some acting skills.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really surprising. And what's also surprising is how well the characters are written, too. The dynamic between the two people who have been established to have a history together, and Kiki Palmer's character's unending patience with all the stuff that's happening around her, is super inspiring, but also really funny, because it's a movie where Kiki Palmer has a really bad day, and yeah. The way she reacts to it is really funny. What's also surprising is Cat Williams in the movie. Zach, I know you were excited to hear that he was in there.
I love Cat Williams.
Yeah.
And I was watching the trailer before we got on here, and he seems to be, is it a homeless person?
Cat Williams plays a homeless man who tries the entire movie to get Kiki Palmer and SZA out of debt.
Aw, yeah. I love Cat Williams.
I love Cat Williams. What a hero.
What a hero.
Yeah, he's super funny in it, and there is a running gag where he just keeps showing up randomly, and it is incredibly hilarious and surprising every single time. There were also a bunch of new actors in the movie that I had never seen before. I checked their IMDb. It's their first movie. So not only is this movie a really great platform for SZA to debut her acting career, it's also a great platform for new actors who have never even been on screen before to get their start. So I think it's a really admirable endeavor for Issa Rae and Kiki Palmer and all the crew to give those people an opportunity to get their start in their careers. The people we interviewed also agreed with how funny it was. Obviously, it's a comedy, and they were really surprised by how heartwarming it was as well, and how the friendship comes across on screen. But yeah, I personally thought it was a really great movie, and I would obviously encourage all of you to watch it.
Okay, so it seems to me that SZA is getting into her acting bag,
mm-hmm.
and is kind of going off in the movie. Yeah, we weren't able to play the interviews, but both of the people interviewed really loved the movie. And I'm kind of convinced that I should be going to watch it as well. I can't lie. One thing I wanted to say, which I just thought was really interesting, she's an actor, a singer, right? But also, I don't know if you guys have seen, she had like a recent tweet or like upload on Instagram of her saying that she might just retire into like children music, like kind of transition from her more adult audience into more of a like younger crowd. You know, she's been featured on Sesame Street, which is already such a big step into that direction. And honestly, go off. I want to see that.
Good for her. I had no idea about that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm chronically online, so I got to make sure I know all these things.
You know what? Good for you. I'm also chronically online, Unfortunately, I am caught up on all the movies that are out right now, except for the ones that are coming out in a few weeks. Guys, what are you excited about in the movies for the next few weeks?
Oh my god, I don't even know. Honestly, I would love to go to the movies a lot more, but I just find myself more and more on streaming platforms. But I mean, the movies that have been out have been kind of hitting. I can't lie. Like, right? I don't know. Have any of you guys seen Nosferatu here?
Dude, so good.
Woo!
So freaky.
So good. Like, the cinematography, first of all, already worth watching. Just already worth, right? And I think something special about that movie that, like, really kind of makes it stand out compared to other iterations of, you know, the Nosferatu Dracula story is that it wasn't too on the nose. Like, it wasn't all the normal tropes that you find with a Dracula vampire movie where, like, oh, you have to invite him in. Oh, these things, this thing. Like, there's all these, like, conditions that come with, you know, a Dracula movie, right? But I really think it was subtle. I think they did it perfectly. Also found some connections to a toxic relationship.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it was like Nosferatu was like the toxic ex that just came back suddenly. And I also think strangely comedic in Thomas's performance. He was just having a really bad time in Nosferatu's castle. And I do want to say that you do feel bad while watching him having a bad time. But there are moments where you chuckle a little. Because it is, at its core, a very strange and surreal movie. And they are very surreal circumstances. But that's just me. I find the comedy in everything. I'm personally very excited for Paddington 3.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Oh my
Paddington?
Gosh.
Ooh.
I know.
Peak.
Paddington is peak. I'm a little sad that the mom in the last two movies is not there, but my mother, Olivia Colman, will be there. And she plays an actual Mother Reverend. And I'm very, very hyped for it. Marianne, do you have any upcoming movies you're excited about?
Honestly, there's nothing that I've heard of recently. The last movie I watched in theaters was Wicked. And I think any movie that I'm excited for is probably at the end of the year, like Wicked Part 2, and maybe, like, Zootopia 2.
Oh, Zootopia 2 is coming out?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's going to be peak, too.
Yes, I'm really excited. I love Disney movies. So All these movies you were talking about, I wasn't too familiar about, but
yeah,
seem interesting.
Well, actually, while we were in the theaters for one of them days, a lot of trailers played, and there were, strangely, a lot of horror movies. So It's the season of horror.
I saw one, I don't know if they showed it, but it was like a monkey toy horror movie.
I wanted to talk about
that.
That
one looks amazing.
Yeah. So I was already familiar with the story because I actually got passed down a book that the movie is based on.
Uh-huh.
And it's about just a demon monkey toy that kills people. So when I saw that trailer, I was really hyped for it. It looks really good. It stars Theo James and it's based on a Stephen King novel.
Oh.
And there's just a lot of horror coming out right now. And as a horror fan, I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, honestly, like, it's been kind of interesting lately. Like, there's been a mix of, like, good horror movies and bad horror movies. Well, I guess we should, like, kind of talk about what makes a bad horror movie to kind of justify these other horror movies. But I would say there's been a lot less dolls, right?
There has been a lot less
there's
dolls.
There's been a lot the less
aside.
Annoying, like, you know, exorcism movies. And I think people are just starting to get a little bit more creative. You know, I think with a lot of horror movies, they're low budget. So people think that they can just make a low budget movie, make like 10, 20 mil in the box office, and then go on to make another like crappy movie. But I'm pleasantly surprised with some of these movies. Like, what's the one that has Nick Cage in it that just came out?
Oh, I was going to say Renfield, but that's a good horror movie.
What is it?
Renfield, Nick Cage plays Nosferatu. And, yeah.
Really?
That's, yeah. And Nicholas Holt, who is in Nosferatu, plays Renfield in the Nick Cage one. Oh. So he's been in two vampire movies, and he has a horrible time in both of them. It's so great. I love his filmography. I can tell you that while Nosferatu is a great remake, what's a bad remake is Wolfman, that also came out recently. While I do love the director's work, he created Saw. He did a really bad job at making us care about the characters. And while the costuming and the special effects were good to create a wolf man, it didn't really scare me or make me care about his struggle. Because over the film, you see him transform into this, like, uncaring, heartless wolf. But ultimately, you just kind of don't care. And while it is a tragic storyline, there aren't really any stakes in it, in that, like, it's just a normal, predictable family drama at its core. So, yeah, there's, like, a lot of hits or misses in the theaters right now, but I would say One of Them Days is very much going to be a hit.
Okay. Just, like, kind of bouncing off what you were just saying, I actually wasn't familiar with this vampire rendition of Nick Cage. I don't know if you guys have seen Long Legs.
Long legs?
The big bad is actually Nick Cage as well.
This is true.
Seems like Nick Cage has been eaten lately.
Nick Cage's villain era is here.
He's hitting. Honestly, like, there's been a big resurgence of Nick Cage lately. Like, he's just coming out of the, I don't know, the shadows to come and give us some good-ass good content.
The renaissance for Nick Cage is here, and we are very excited for it. Everyone should go watch Renfield. It is on Hulu. And it's a comedy horror, so it's a convergence of two genres we've been talking about today. And it also stars, obviously, Nicholas Holt as Renfield. And it's also a depiction of a toxic relationship through the depiction of Dracula. So people who have seen Nosferatu should also go watch Renfield for another rendition of Nosferatu.
What do you think, Jeremy? Is there any movies that you've liked lately that maybe you want to talk about?
Yes, I see there's recently a film coming soon. It's a Chinese film. It happened in San Francisco, 1990. It's a detective film, which will be fine, I think.
Okay. Well, I think that's our time for today, so we're going to move it on to the next group.
Yeah.
But you are watching, or I mean, sorry.
You are listening to KDRT 95.7 FM Davis. You can also stream us on KDRT.org. We have been Radio Rebel. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. This is KDRT at 95.7
106.7, and this is Saz, and today we'll be talking about some events that are going on in the community of Davis. I'm Aiden. I'll be starting. Would everyone like to introduce themselves real quick?
Yeah, I'm Suwen. And I'm Zhi.
And I'm Chang.
And I'll be going first. So the event I'll be discussing today is, some of you might already be aware, but over on G Street, they've finally finished the construction that's going on there. The grand opening of the new kind of like pavilion area was 2 days ago on Tuesday, January 28th. And it's been in construction for a while. It was closed off since like 2020 because restaurants and like over there were using the outdoor area during COVID as a seating arrangement because people couldn't be inside. So they closed it off and people liked it so much that the city ended up deciding to make it a permanent like person area for like be able people to spend time. They put like tables out. They left the outdoor eating areas. And then they eventually decided to just make that permanent. And so they shut it down for a bit and did some construction to add like more tables, more seating, make it more of like a like concrete like pavilion. And it cost about $1 million to do this. And so what I did is I went out and I interviewed someone to see like what their thoughts were on this area. Did they think it was a nice place? Did they think it was worth the money? And yeah, this is my interview with Victoria Bechtel. Hi guys, today we're going to be interviewing some people on their thoughts on the construction going on G Street, which just finished the other day. To start with, we have with us, you can introduce yourself if you'd like, but you also don't have to.
Okay. Hi, I'm Victoria Bechtel.
Okay, so first question. Do you think, like, what do you think of the construction? Like, do you think it looks good? Do you think it was a good idea? What are your thoughts?
I honestly think it's a good idea because I feel like Davis needs more areas where people can just hang out and have, like, just one specific street blocked off for them. Especially like in a populated area like that with like where you have tons of hangout spots, tons of restaurants on that street. I think it was a good idea. However, I kind of think the layout of it and just like how it looks kind of cheap in a way. Or they didn't put too much thought into it. And I feel like it doesn't really express like how Davis community is and how it really looks like.
Awesome. That was a really thorough answer. Good job. Second question, this will be the last one. Do you think it was money well spent? And apparently it cost around $1 million for that construction.
I think if you really take into the consideration of just like the materials used into it, the people that worked in it and just like make that happen, I think the $1 million can be justified in a way. I just wish that they did more on like presentability and how like it looks, which I think would have made it look even more justified for the amount that it was spent because, I don't know, it would just look nicer, but yeah.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your time. Hope you have a good rest of your day.
You too.
Bye. Hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Victoria. Yeah, that's some thoughts on the new G Street construction. Yeah, so that was my interview with Victoria. As you can see, I think I kind of share her opinions. It's, in general, was a good idea. I think it's nice to have that area kind of permanently blocked off as a more, like, social area. But I do think maybe the color coordination and overall design maybe could have been a bit better. But with all that in mind, I still think it was overall a good use of money. With that, we'll be moving on to Siwen.
Yeah, hi, good morning, everyone. So today I want to talk about an exciting event coming up that's perfect for anyone interested in real estate or investing. It's called Invest Together, Grow Together, a real estate webinar. And it's happening right here in Davis every day online except Sunday and Friday. So this event isn't just about sitting and listening. It's about joining a community where you can learn and grow together. The goal is to help you navigate the world of real estate. Whether you are a beginner or someone looking to take your knowledge to the next level, imagine be partnered with friends or family on real estate deals, creating wealth and building a future that benefits everyone around you. So this session is divided into four key areas. First, you will learn about the top 5 benefits of investing in real estate. Second, they'll show you how to potentially lower your tax rate to as low as 8%. Third, you will be introduced to a unique strategy called three-dimensional investing, which is exclusive to this group. And finally, you will get tips on effective marketing tactics to ensure your success in the real estate world. So I interviewed one person around me about his opinion of this event. Let's listen together. So there's an event about real estate. Have you ever considered investing in real estate? Why or why not?
Yeah, the answer is definitely yes. I always wanted to invest in real estate in sometime in the future.
And this webinar focuses on real estate investing strategies, tax benefits, and marketing techniques. Does that sound like something you're interested in learning about?
Yes. Okay, all three of those, what did you say? The real estate strategies, tax, and marketing, especially marketing, actually, is something that I really want to learn recently.
Mm-hmm. So, what aspects of real estate interest you the most? The financial growth, passive income, or something else?
Financial growth and passive income, definitely. And I believe investing in real estate also opens the door for me to travel around the world, and I'll have places to live in even though I don't live in that country, so to speak. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so this webinar feels like the perfect way to dip our toes into something real and impactful, something that goes beyond textbooks and lectures. So if you're curious about real estate, or if you're just looking for a way to explore new opportunities, I highly recommend checking out this webinar. It's a chance to learn, connect, and maybe even start building your future today.
Hi, this is Zhi, and I'm taking an event. Whether you've heard about it, there are going to be some upcoming exhibitions on the Penn's Gallery, which is on the 212 D Street on the Davis downtown. And I just have an interview with one person about their opinions on the exhibitions on the gallery, whether they will go on it or... their opinions on the Davis community about these kind of arts. So let's going on.
Hi, we're now learning about the Davis community's view on local art and culture. Do you usually go to Penn's Gallery in the Davis downtown?
Hi, occasionally, especially when there are special exhibitions, I like to see how local and foreign artists express their views.
Oh, okay. So there are gonna be a new exhibition on the Penn's Gallery, which is called Ronald Pete's Work in Progress. And this exhibition just combines humors and some social events and some ideas on their social events. Do you think these works will resonate with the community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed. He is famous for his surrealistic works.
Yes, he liked to incorporate puns, words game, and also relevant humors into his work. So starting from his concepts, he just chose any of many medias he uses to best bring his idea to life.
Yeah, indeed. I think there are many people in Davis who are interested in social issues and like to discuss real-life issues through art. We talk about many of these issues every day.
Okay, great. So what do you think of the presentation format? Do you think these will make people know what they are talking about or let them know more about these like social events?
Yeah, I think definitely such black humor would be easier for audience to accept, and the form of art exhibition itself is more conducive to spread some, ideas within the communities.
Great, I like your answers. So maybe 1 week later, will you go to see it then?
Yeah, for sure. I have made an appointment with my friends and we'll definitely go.
Okay, thank you so much for the interview. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Chang, and I'm going to tell you guys and the Davis Outfitters Chocolate Festival is going to start Sunday, February 2nd, and I just do a little bit interview with my friend, one of the biggest chocolate fans around me, and let's see what he got here.
Hi, Stewie. Thank you for joining me today. I'm excited to talk with you about something sweet that's coming up, the Davis Chocolate Festival. I know you're a big fan of chocolate. Have you heard about this event before?
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me. Yes, I've heard a bit about the Davis Chocolate Festival, and it sounds absolutely delicious. I'm really looking forward to it.
So, what excited you the most about the Davis Chocolate Festival?
I think what excites me the most is the variety of chocolates, and I will try that. There is something magical about the tasting different flavors from different makers. It's a journey through a world of chocolate.
Are there any specific types of chocolates or vendors you are particularly looking forward to at the festival?
I'm eager to see if there are any local artisan chocolatiers presenting their creations. I love supporting local businesses and trying unique and handcrafted chocolates that you can find anywhere else.
Yeah, right. So how do you think attending an event like the Davis Chocolate Festival impacts your appreciation for chocolates?
It definitely depends my appreciation. Not just for the taste, but for the crafts behind making chocolate. Learning about the different techniques and the origin.
Okay, guys, that's it for Saz. Thank you for listening to 97.7 or 95.7 KDRT.